Good evening. This is the Pacifica Evening News Special Holiday Broadcast. I'm your host, Lauren Schmidt. Tonight, we bring you part one of our two-part year in review, highlighting the stories KPFA News covered at home and abroad throughout 2025. It was a year that tested democracy, reshaped global power, and compelled communities into the streets. From the return of Donald Trump and the policies that followed, to multiple wars, mass protest, climate catastrophe, and historic firsts. Tonight, we look back through the reporting of our KPFA news team, the voices we amplified, the moments that mattered, and the forces that defined the year. Buckle up and stay tuned. The first week of 2025 saw Congress formally certify the presidential election results, this time without an insurrection, as KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Vice President Kamala Harris, who lost the election to Donald Trump, announced the results.
The majority is 270. The votes for President of the United States are as follows. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 312 votes. Kamala D. Harris of the state of California has received 226 votes.
It pretty much went without a hitch. Unlike 4 years ago, there was no speech by a defeated president claiming a stolen election, no insurrection, no one killed or injured at the Capitol. Harris spoke to reporters after the vote.
Well, today was obviously a very important day, and it was about what should be the norm and what the American people should be able to take for granted, which is that one of the most important pillars of our democracy is that there will be a peaceful transfer of power.
Meanwhile, new state laws took effect across California, including new protections prohibiting collection agencies from sharing medical debt information, and labor laws were expanded, including paid sick leave for farm workers during extreme natural events. California raised the minimum wage from $16 to $16.50, with another 40-cent increase scheduled for 2026. In his final month in office, outgoing President Joe Biden took a series of sweeping actions. Biden honored Native Americans by designing new tribal national monuments in California. He also commuted the sentences of roughly 2,500 nonviolent drug offenders, bringing his total number of pardons and commutations to more than any president in U.S. history. Among them was Native American activist Leonard Peltier, whose sentence was commuted to indefinite house arrest.
What really kept me strong was my anger. I was extremely angry about what they did to me and my people. And I'm still very, very angry.
In his final speech as president, Joe Biden issued a stark warning, saying an emerging oligarchy of extreme wealth, power, and influence threatens American democracy and basic rights.
This will be my final address to you from the American people from the Oval Office, from this desk as president. And I've been thinking a lot about who we are and maybe more importantly, who we should be.
President Joe Biden gave his farewell to the nation, capping off his term as president and his 50 years of public service. As with many such speeches, he touted some of the accomplishments of his presidency, like legislation to modernize infrastructure, lower drug prices for seniors, a major gun safety law, and what he called the most significant climate law in the history of the world. But he also had warnings about things he says give him great concern.
And that's the dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people. And the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy.
our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead.
He recalled President Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address, which warned about the dangers of the military-industrial complex.
6 decades later, I'm equally concerned about the potential rise of a tech-industrial complex that could pose real dangers for our country as well. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit.
As an example of the problem, he talked about action on climate change.
Powerful forces want to wield their unchecked influence to eliminate the steps we've taken to tackle the climate crisis, to serve their own interest for power and profit. We must not be bullied into sacrificing the future of our children and our grandchildren. We must keep pushing forward and push faster. There's no time to waste.
Just days before taking office, Donald Trump was sentenced in a hush money case, though the judge declined to impose punishment.
Appearing via video from his Florida Mar-a-Lago estate, President-elect Donald Trump called the hush money case against him a, quote, political witch hunt, and maintained his innocence during the brief sentencing.
It was done to damage my reputation so that I'd lose the election, and obviously that didn't work.
Manhattan Judge Juan Merchan issued an unconditional discharge, meaning that while the conviction stands, Trump will not face fines or jail time. Merchan cited constitutional considerations in his decision, emphasizing the need to respect presidential legal protections while upholding the jury's verdict.
The considerable, indeed, extraordinary legal protections afforded by the office of the chief executive is a factor that overrides all others. To be clear, the protections afforded the office of the president are not a mitigating factor. They do not reduce the seriousness of the crime or justify its commission in any way. The protections are, however, a legal mandate which, pursuant to the rule of law, this court must respect and follow.
The case, stemming from a $130,000 payment to porn actor Stormy Daniels during Trump's 2016 campaign, marked the first criminal conviction of a former U.S. president. Prosecutors accused Trump of falsifying business records to conceal the payment, which he denies. Trump, convicted on 34 counts, said he plans to appeal. Trump will be the first president to take office with a felony conviction. I'm Scott Baba, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
On January 20th, Donald Trump was sworn into the office for the second time.
The golden age of America begins right now.
Newly sworn in President Donald Trump took the oath of office at noon in an indoor ceremony in the Capitol Rotunda, the same room where angry Trump supporters rioted 1,475 days ago. And with that, Trump becomes the first convicted felon to become president of the United States. After the ceremony, Trump gave his inaugural address, saying he returns to the presidency confident of what he calls a thrilling new era of national success.
For American citizens, January 20th, 2025 is Liberation Day. It is my hope that our recent presidential election will be remembered as the greatest and most consequential election in the history of our country. Today, I will sign a series of historic executive orders. With these actions, we will begin the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. It's all about common sense. Together, we will end the chronic disease epidemic and keep our children safe, healthy, and disease-free. The United States will once again consider itself a growing nation, one that increases our wealth, expands our territory, builds our cities, raises our expectations, and carries our flag into new and beautiful horizons. and we will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That same day, TikTok came back online after a brief shutdown. Its future had been uncertain until this month, when TikTok signed a deal to spin off its U.S. operations to a group controlled by mostly American investors, including software giant Oracle, the company run by billionaire Trump ally Larry Ellison. In his first days back in office, Trump signed a wave of executive orders targeting immigrant families, the trans community, and expanding his executive power. That action prompted California Attorney General Rob Bonta to file what would become the first of dozens of lawsuits challenging the Trump administration.
I have one message for President Trump. I'll see you in court. In one fell swoop, he stripped the constitutional right to citizenship for children who will be born on U.S. soil, regardless of their parents' immigration status. The president chose to start his second term by knocking down one of our country's foundational, long-standing rights and disregarding our nation's governing document.
January saw the first confirmation hearings for Trump's cabinet, including Pete Hegseth, RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and Pam Bondi, Trump's former lawyer who challenged the 2020 election results.
My overriding objective will be to return the Department of Justice to its core mission of keeping Americans safe and vigorously prosecuting criminals. And that includes getting back to basics: gangs, drugs, terrorists, cartels, our border, and our foreign adversaries. That is what the American people expect, and that is what they deserve from the Department of Justice. If confirmed, I will do everything in my power, and it will be my great responsibility to make America safe again.
Bondi also served as Trump's personal lawyer as Trump sought to overturn his 2020 election loss. And she's a cause for concern for Democratic lawmakers like Dick Durbin of Illinois, the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. Durbin talked about Trump's vows to arrest and jail his enemies.
Ms. Bondi, you are one of four Trump personal lawyers that he has already selected for top positions in the Department of Justice. You joined Mr. Trump in working to overturn the 2020 election. You've repeatedly described investigations and prosecutions of Mr. Trump as witch hunts, and you have echoed his calls for investigating and prosecuting his political opponents.
Durbin also took Bondi to task for claiming Trump won in 2020.
Are you prepared to say today under oath without reservation that Donald Trump lost the presidential contest to Joe Biden in 2020?
Ranking Member Durbin, President Biden is the President of the United States. He was duly sworn in, and he is the President of the United States. There was a peaceful transition of power. President Trump left office and was overwhelmingly elected in 2024.
Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island told Bondi he's concerned about the weaponization of the Justice Department under Trump. Bondi sees the issue in different terms.
Senator, I think that is the whole problem with the weaponization that we have seen the last 4 years and what's been happening to Donald Trump. They targeted Donald Trump. They went after him. Actually, starting back in 2016, they targeted his campaign. They have launched countless investigations against him. That will not be the case if I am Attorney General. I will not politicize that office. I will not target people simply because of their political affiliation. Justice will be administered even-handedly throughout this country.
January also brought a Trump administration order freezing federal grants and loans, along with sweeping pardons for January 6th insurrectionists. Since then, at least 33 people pardoned for offenses have been rearrested, charged, or sentenced for other crimes. January 2025 also opened with political shock in Canada, as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced his resignation, ending nearly a decade in office and triggering a rapid leadership transition within the Liberal Party. KPFA's Max Pringle spoke with the Toronto-based Globe and Mail reporter Stephanie Levitz.
Since the summer, but really in the last couple of weeks, the pressure for Mr. Trudeau to resign has been intense. Numerous members of his party have publicly stated he needs to go. Cabinet ministers have walked away saying they're not going to seek re-election. It just really has all been a bit of a dumpster fire for Mr. Trudeau, and the prospect that he could stay on and lead his government, lead his party rather, to the polls just wasn't in the cards for him, as he said this morning in his resignation speech.
Just 2 months later, in March, Canadian voters elected Liberal Mark Carney as Prime Minister. Analysts say Carney's victory was shaped in part by shifting U.S.-Canada relations. Back in California, the new year began with a devastating wildfire. More than 18,000 homes were destroyed in Los Angeles. While the official death count stands at 32, a study from Boston University's School of Public Health estimates more than 400 excess deaths were linked to the January fires, the first such mortality study of its kind. Atta Shaheen reports.
1.5 million residents have lost power, more than 100 schools closed, and huge swaths of the region are dealing with dangerous air quality from the deadly and record-breaking Los Angeles wildfires. Firefighters had to ground planes and helicopters overnight Tuesday because winds were too strong, gusting at up to 100 miles an hour. They managed to get aircrafts up again Wednesday morning to drop fire retardant. Also, a number of fire hydrants ran dry, according to the Department of Water and Power. They've sent in mobile water tankers and had to refill water stores for hydrants. Reinforcements also coming from across the state and out of state. The Pentagon announced the sending of 10 Navy helicopters to help fight the fires. The Palisades fire is already the most destructive fire in Los Angeles history, and there is a sense of unprecedented dire feelings from LA residents and leaders. Actor Steve Guttenberg described the scenes in Manhattan Beach.
There were people in wheelchairs trying to get out who didn't have time to put their foot rests on. And we had to figure out how to pop a wheelie with these wheelchairs. There were little kids. There were mothers trying to find their kids. There were anxiety, panic attacks. It's terrible.
For KPFA Radio, Atta Shaheen.
The fire continues to raise long-term concerns, from toxic pollution to heightened risks of flooding and landslides. February saw the Trump administration, alongside billionaire Elon Musk, move to shut down the U.S. Agency for International Development, sparking chaos and outrage. Democrats called it an illegal power grab.
Ilhan Omar is a congressmember from Minnesota.
I am exceptionally upset about USAID. I lived in a refugee camp for 4 years as a child surviving civil war. It is the essential programs that USAID provided that kept my family and I fed and safe. It is the resources that so many people around the world rely on. And it is our soft power.
She says Trump and Musk are trying to take away the power of Congress.
It is really, really a sad day in America. We are witnessing a constitutional crisis.
Several Democratic lawmakers tried to enter the USAID headquarters Monday, but they were blocked by Homeland Security officers. Maryland Senator Jamie Raskin says Congress created USAID and Elon Musk does not have the power to destroy it, adding, "We do not have a fourth branch of government called Elon Musk."
A report from Harvard School of Public Health has linked the shutdown to hundreds of thousands of deaths from infectious disease and malnutrition. USAID staffing was slashed from 10,000 workers to just 600. As foreign aid froze, it halted medicine deliveries and clinical trials worldwide. The United States also moved to withdraw from the World Health Organization, with Argentina following suit. Democratic lawmakers introduced the so-called Stop the Steal bill to push back against what they called a Trump-Musk power grab.
We call our legislation Stop the Steal.
Senator Chuck Schumer is the Senate Minority Leader. He spoke at a news conference with Hakeem Jeffries, the House Democratic Leader. Jeffries says extreme MAGA Republicans want to end Social Security and Medicaid as we know it.
It's unfortunate that many of our Republican colleagues are determined to stand up a shadow government of the billionaires, by the billionaires, and for the billionaires that will stick it to the American people. That's what's driving much of the behavior on the other side of the aisle.
The Democrats blasted billionaire Elon Musk, Trump's pick to head the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, the shadow government that Jeffries and Schumer are talking about. Schumer says DOGE is not a real government agency and has no authority to make funding decisions or shut down programs. Musk says DOGE is, in his words, the one shot that the American people have to defeat bureaucracy and restore government.
Shortly after, Democrats forced a week-long delay in the confirmation of Kash Patel as FBI director, warning the nominee appeared poised to pursue political revenge on behalf of Trump.
The Senate Judiciary Committee scheduled a Thursday hearing to act on the nomination of Kash Patel to head the FBI for the next decade. But when the hearing came, it was brief. Republican Chuck Grassley of Iowa is chair of the committee.
The minority, as well as myself, have exercised their right and my right under the committee rules to hold over the nomination of Kash Patel to be director of the FBI. So that nomination is held over.
It's not unusual for a Senate committee to delay a hearing for a week. What is unusual is for a senator to force an in-person meeting for the delay, and that is what Democrats did. Democrats have raised concerns such as Patel's hesitance in answering questions in a confirmation hearing and his involvement in a musical produced by convicted January 6th insurrectionists. Senator Dick Durbin is the ranking Democrat on the committee.
For God's sake, to give the most sweeping investigative agency in the United States and the world over to this man to settle political scores is something we're going to regret. That's why we asked for a second hearing on this.
Patel himself dismissed Democrats' objections to him as false accusations and grotesque mischaracterizations.
Any accusations leveled against me that I would somehow put political bias before the Constitution are grotesquely unfair, and I will have you reminded that I have been endorsed by over 300,000 law enforcement officers to become the next director of the FBI. Let's ask them.
Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii says these are crazy times, and we should all be asking what is going on.
The FBI that has all the levers and tools to investigate and go after people who are potentially harmful to our country. If we can't rely on these people to keep us safe, then we are in very deep trouble.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Patel would later be sworn in. The Senate also confirmed Russell Vogt to lead the Office of Management and Budget, as Democrats accused him of turning Project 2025 into official policy. Meanwhile, Trump's Education Secretary nominee laid out plans to dismantle the Department of Education. February marked a sharp shift in U.S. policy toward Russia. Trump opened peace negotiations with Vladimir Putin as Defense Secretary, now the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, said Ukraine's recovery of occupied territory was unrealistic. Vice President J.D. Vance drew backlash at the Munich Security Conference, where he scolded European leaders over free speech and migration.
There is a new sheriff in town, and under Donald Trump's leadership, we may disagree with your views, but we will fight to defend your right to offer it in the public square, agree or disagree. And of all the pressing challenges that the nations represented here face, I believe there is nothing more urgent than mass migration. The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. And trust me, I say this with all humor, if American democracy can survive 10 years of Greta Thunberg scolding, you guys can survive a few months of Elon Musk.
Billionaire Trump advisor Elon Musk posted on his social media platform, "Make Europe Great Again, Mega, Mega, Mega." But the speech did not go down so well with those attending the conference. One diplomat described himself as sitting with his jaw dropped in a room full of people with their jaws dropped. Norwegian Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre also took issue with the speech.
I think, you know, here's one issue I have with the vice president's speech. I have a few, but this one, let's mention this one. He speaks as though we are not focused on immigration in Europe. I mean, this is the big theme in every country, that we want to have control of our borders, we want to have controlled immigration, and this is a key theme, I think, all across Europe.
Like many others at the conference, the Prime Minister noted that Vance said nothing significant about Ukraine, among other pressing issues.
Less than a month into Trump's return to office, protesters took to the streets for the first No Kings rally.
Today it's President's Day, and I feel like we don't have a president right now. We have a dictator, a fascist.
I'm out here because as a trans woman, as a teacher, I'm watching everything that I've built my life around fall apart, crumble into dust. I can't, in good conscience, continue to be a teacher without, like, bringing my voice and showing my students and my own kids that, you know, this is the important part. This is where life really is. This is America as we look around.
I study history and I'm seeing the signs that we're going down a path that we don't want to go. And I don't think that a lot of us are actually thinking about that or seeing the signs. And I think that they're very clear right now. I feel like it's important to give voice to marginalized groups and defend those first, because they're coming for everybody.
February also marked the rise of dangerous rhetoric in U.S. politics. Elon Musk came under fire after making what critics described as a double Nazi salute gesture. A month later, Steve Bannon faced similar backlash following an apparent Nazi salute at CPAC. Civil rights group warned the incidents reflected a broader normalization of far-right extremism, including open anti-Semitic rhetoric and Holocaust denial, no longer confined to the political fringe, as figures like Nick Fuentes gained renewed visibility. February was also marked by mass firings and layoffs across the federal government, including what workers dubbed the Valentine's Day Massacre. KPFA's Vic Bedoyan filed this report.
The budget attack on Yosemite and Kings Canyon Sequoia National Parks sparked spontaneous protests by fired park rangers and people who love the parks. Kings Canyon Sequoia lost 9 rangers and Yosemite lost 12. Last week, a protest in the Sequoia Gateway town of Three Rivers brought together impacted park rangers and concerned citizens in front of the post office. As reported by the Visalia Times Delta, they called it the Protect U.S. Rally. The announcement read, "Stand with your neighbors in protest over toxic treatment and mass firings of civil servants and gutting of agencies on whom everyday Americans depend." Yosemite Valley saw a reaction to the firings as well. In a protest that captivated the nation, rock climbers hung a flag upside down as a distress signal on El Capitan. Meanwhile, at a rally with dozens of protesters, fired science ranger Andrea Townsend said she lost her job working with endangered Pacific fishers in a disparaging email. Her position was funded by a foundation grant.
It made me really angry. I work really hard at my job. I have 2 degrees. I studied fishers my entire life. And to tell me that I'm not meeting the standards of my job, like I said, it's the complete lie.
Numerous lawsuits have been filed claiming the firings did not follow legal protocols. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
You're listening to the Pacifica Evening News, part one of our holiday broadcast, the KPFA Newsroom's 2025 Year in Review. I'm your host, Lauren Schmidt. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans passed a Trump-backed budget bill featuring massive spending cuts. Democrats condemned the plan as an attack on workers, designed to benefit billionaires. Described as one of the most cringe-inducing moments of the year came when Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with Trump at the White House to discuss security guarantees for Ukraine and U.S. access to critical minerals.
You see the hatred he's got for Putin. It's very tough for me to make a deal with that kind of hate. He's got tremendous hatred, and I understand that, but I can tell you the other side isn't exactly in love with, you know, him either. So it's not a question of alignment. I'm aligned with the world. I want to get the thing set. I'm aligned with Europe. Let me tell you, Putin went through a hell of a lot with me. He went through a phony witch hunt where they used him and Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. You ever hear of that deal? That was a phony Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scam. Hillary Clinton, Shifty Adam Schiff. It was a Democrat scam. And he had to go through that. And he did go through it. We didn't end up in a war. And he went through it. He was accused of all that stuff. He had nothing to do with it. It came out of Hunter Biden's bathroom.
He broke this ceasefire. He killed our people, and he didn't exchange prisoners. We signed the exchange of prisoners, but he didn't do it. What kind of diplomacy, J.D., you are speaking about? What do you mean?
Mr. President, with respect, I think it's disrespectful for you to come into the Oval Office and try to litigate this in front of the American media. Right now, you guys are going around and forcing conscripts to the front lines because you have manpower problems. You should be thanking the president for trying to bring it into this conflict.
Trump told Zelensky, "You've allowed yourself to be in a very bad position."
You're not in a good position. The cards right now. With us, you start having
cards.
Right now, you're playing cards.
I'm very serious, Mr. President.
You're gambling with the lives of millions of people. You're gambling with World War III. And what you're doing is very disrespectful to the country, this country. The problem is, I've empowered you to be a tough guy. And I don't think you'd be a tough guy without the United States. And your people are very brave. But you're either going to make a deal or we're out. And if we're out, you'll fight it out. I don't think it's going to be pretty, but you'll fight it out. But you don't have the cards.
Trump ally Lindsey Graham, senator from South Carolina, said on Fox News, "I've never been more proud of Trump for showing the American people and the world you don't trifle with this man." Russian Security Council Deputy Chair Dmitry Medvedev wrote on social media, "The insolent pig finally got a proper slapdown in the Oval Office." President Trump gave his own opinion at the end of the meeting.
All right, I think we've seen enough. What do you think?
This is
going to be great television, I will say that.
The start of 2025 was also grim for Palestinians. A United Nations report found Israeli military operations were targeting hospitals in Gaza, pushing the health system to the brink of collapse and raising concerns of possible war crimes and crimes against humanity. As winter set in, at least 7 infants froze to death in Gaza. By March, Israel blocked humanitarian aid entirely, unveiling what officials called a hell plan to pressure agreement on a new ceasefire proposal.
Here in western Gaza City, where a majority of the residents have returned to their homes just a few weeks ago during the ceasefire, many Palestinians reject the plan. Hanan Hashish is a mother of 5 children.
The situation is getting difficult, but after we experience displacement and we're deprived of many things, we can withstand any situation. So it'll be normal for me not to find certain items in the market.
Others in the same area are also vowing to defy Israeli plans to forcibly displace Palestinians from northern Gaza. Salah Abdelati is a Gaza-based human rights activist. He is head of the Palestinian Committee for Defending the Palestinian People's Rights.
We condemn the repeated remarks either by the USA or the occupation state with respect to the Hell Plan to pressure the Palestinian people by preventing entry of humanitarian aid to the Strip. We also condemn the use of weapons to kill civilians and destroy residential homes. Such actions are considered to be war crimes for which Israel should be held accountable and sanctioned until it abides by international law.
I'm Teresa Wersbianska.
In March, Trump imposed sweeping tariffs on America's three largest trading partners, Canada, Mexico, and China, triggering swift retaliation from all three.
Today, the United States launched a trade war against Canada, their closest partner and ally, their closest friend. At the same time, they're talking about working positively with Russia, appeasing Vladimir Putin, a lying, murderous dictator. Make that make sense.
Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau fired back at President Donald Trump's 25% tariffs on Canadian imports, now in effect, and announced his own tariffs on U.S. products.
Canadians are reasonable, and we are polite, but we will not back down from a fight. Not when our country and the well-being of everyone in it is at stake. Canada will be implementing 25% tariffs against $155 billion worth of American goods.
I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Protests against Trump and Musk continued nationwide. Federal employee unions rallied against DOGE, condemning mass firings and the dismantling of federal agencies and programs.
Evict Elon!
Evict Elon!
Evict Elon!
Evict Elon!
Evict Elon!
Who are we?
AFGE! Did we elect Elon Musk?
Hell no!
No! DOGE stands for Disrespect Our Government Employee.
Right.
Now, in my 44 years with AFGE, I have never seen the blatant disdain and disrespect for federal employee that we're seeing here today.
Despite the unrest early in his presidency, Donald Trump continued to double down on culture war rhetoric.
President Donald Trump delivered his speech to Congress Tuesday, and at an hour and 40 minutes, it was the longest such speech in recent history.
We're getting wokeness out of our schools and out of our military, and it's already out, and it's out of our society. We don't want it. Wokeness is trouble. Wokeness is bad. It's gone. It's gone. And we feel so much better for it, don't we?
He boasted of his nearly 100 executive orders and more than 400 executive actions, including withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, the World Health Organization, and the UN Human Rights Council.
And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately.
Actually, someone was removed from Trump's speech, Democratic Representative Al Green of Texas, who filed articles of impeachment several times during Trump's first term, shouted that Trump has no mandate. And when he refused to sit down, the 77-year-old Democrat was ejected from the chamber on orders of the Republican House Speaker.
This president is unfit. He should not hold the office. 34 felony convictions, 2 times impeached.
Congress censured Democratic Representative Al Green for disrupting Trump's speech. As House Speaker Mike Johnson read the censure resolution, Democrats responded by singing, "We Shall Overcome." Another first for the United States came with Trump's White House cryptocurrency summit, where he vowed to make the United States the crypto capital of the world.
The United States has a strategic petroleum reserve, the world's largest supply of emergency crude oil. Canada has the world's only strategic maple syrup reserve to help regulate the price and supply of maple syrup. On Thursday, President Donald Trump signed an executive order creating a strategic Bitcoin reserve, what Trump calls a virtual Fort Knox for digital gold. And on Friday, Trump, who once said that digital currency Bitcoin, in his words, seems like a scam, welcomed cryptocurrency industry leaders to a White House digital assets summit.
Last year, I promised to make America the Bitcoin superpower of the world and the crypto capital of the planet. And We're taking historic action to deliver on that promise.
The Bitcoin reserve, along with another reserve for other cryptocurrencies, will hold cryptocurrencies seized in criminal or civil proceedings. Former President Joe Biden had led a crackdown on crypto, citing concerns over fraud. But Trump courted the crypto community during his presidential campaign. And at the White House summit, Trump said his administration is working to end what he describes as the federal bureaucracy's war on crypto. Others criticize a lack of transparency. In any event, it's not clear how the new Bitcoin reserve will benefit Americans. But crypto czar Sachs says it's not going to cost taxpayers a dime. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
A House Homeland Security Committee hearing saw Republicans focus on alleged waste, fraud, and abuse, while Democrats argued DOGE itself had become the greatest source of waste. Still, the House narrowly passed the Trump-backed government spending bill. One, Democrats warned, amounted to a blank check for Musk and the Trump agenda. In March, Immigration and Customs Enforcement began carrying out masked arrests, drawing national attention with the detention of Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, who helped to lead the Columbia University protests against the war in Gaza. Khalil, a legal permanent resident, was transferred to a detention center in Louisiana and placed under threat of deportation. A federal judge later blocked his removal, ruling he could not be deported without charges. Still, Khalil was denied permission to attend the birth of his first child, and his wife called the decision an attempt to silence him.
Bahir Azmi is an attorney with the Center for Constitutional Rights and one of Khalil's lawyers.
The United States government has taken the position that it can arrest, detain, and seek to deport a lawful permanent resident exclusively because of his peaceful, constitutionally protected activism. In this case, activism in support of Palestinian human rights and an end to the genocide in Gaza.
One of the attorneys representing Khalil read a statement from his pregnant American wife.
My husband was kidnapped from our home, and it's shameful that the United States government continues to hold him because he stood for the rights and lives of his people.
I'm Christina Onestet, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
What will likely go down as one of the most infamous actions of the year followed soon after. A deportation flight carrying roughly 250 people landed in El Salvador, despite a federal judge's order to halt the removals. The White House claimed, however, it did not violate the court order.
A federal judge sharply questioned a Justice Department attorney over whether the Trump administration ignored his orders on Saturday to turn around planes carrying deportees to El Salvador. During the afternoon hearing, District Judge James Boasberg was incredulous over the administration's contention that only his written order mattered and his verbal order did not count. Judge Boasberg also pushed back against the Justice Department's contention that the judge had no jurisdiction over flights once they entered international airspace. Deputy Associate Attorney General Abhishek Kamble refused to answer several of the judge's questions about the flights, citing national security concerns. Boasberg ordered Kamble to answer a series of questions in writing by noon tomorrow. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt defended the deportations at her daily briefing, saying the deportees were dangerous gang members. Under questioning by a CNN reporter, Leavitt laid out the rationale for the administration's apparent defiance of the judge's order on Saturday night.
Does the White House feel the need to comply with a verbal order from this judge?
Again, as I said, all of the planes subject to the written order of this judge departed U.S. soil, U.S. territory before the judge's written order.
But what about the verbal order, which of course carries the same legal weight as a written order, and said for the planes to turn around if they were
well,
in the air?
There's actually questions about whether a verbal order carries the same weight as a legal order.
The hearing over what Boasberg called the possible defiance of his court orders marked the latest step in a high-stakes legal fight. The battle began when President Trump invoked the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to remove Venezuelan and other alleged immigrant gang members over the weekend. The act has only been invoked three times before and never outside of wartime. Legal learned of the ACLU, the lead attorney for the plaintiffs, told the judge, quote, "There's been a lot of talk about constitutional crisis. People throw that word around. I think we're getting very close to it." Trump's border czar, Tom Homan, said on Fox that the administration was determined to proceed with its deportation actions.
Every day, the men and women of ICE are going to be in the neighborhoods of this nation arresting criminal, illegal alien, public safety threats, and national security threats. We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming.
Venezuela's government, meantime, characterized the transfer of migrants to El Salvador as kidnappings that it plans to challenge as crimes against humanity before the United Nations and other international organizations. It also accused El Salvador of profiting off the plights of Venezuelan migrants. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
That same month, the Council on American-Islamic Relations released a report titled Unconstitutional Crackdowns, warning that Islamophobia had reached an all-time high, fueled by the current political climate.
Nihad Awad is the executive director of CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the nation's leading Muslim civil rights organization.
This historic level of the rise of Islamophobia is alarming. The 8,658 cases is a record number that we recognize as a danger to our civil rights and to the well-being of American Muslims.
While CARE recorded a 7% increase in overall Islamophobic incidents, in certain areas, Islamophobia is showing up more pronounced and frequently. Police encounters saw a rapid increase, a 71% uptick last year compared to 2023's historic levels. Education discrimination increased 24% last year compared to 2023, when CARE also recorded a record 219% increase. Awad says, a case in point, the recent arrest and attempted deportation of Palestinian activist and permanent U.S. resident Mahmoud Khalil.
By the end of March, on the 20th, Trump signed an executive order calling for the closure of the Department of Education. Activists also filed suit against UCLA, alleging violence and intimidation against Palestinian and pro-Palestinian protesters. March also marked the first ever World Glacier Day, as the United Nations sought to raise awareness about the importance of glaciers and the accelerating threats posed by climate change.
Romanian diplomat Simona Mirela Miculescu is president of the 42nd session of the General Conference of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. She says this day is historic.
In the words of the woman scientist Celia Earle, no water, no life. No green, no blue.
She noted the launch of a UN World Water Development Report dedicated to water and glaciers. She says the report is very clear.
Glaciers and mountain regions provide fresh water to nearly half of the world's population. With accelerating climate extremes, the melting of glaciers is no longer a distant scenario. It is happening now. And it is happening fast.
The U.S. Supreme Court heard a major voting rights case as white voters challenged a black majority congressional district in Louisiana. The court also took up two cases that could reshape how and when federal courts hear challenges to EPA regulations. Meanwhile, the UN warned of a surge in AIDS-related deaths worldwide, following cuts to humanitarian funding. And on Capitol Hill, the newly formed Congressional DOGE Committee held hearings calling for the defunding of NPR and PBS. Democrats pushed back with calls to save Elmo, warning the move would gut public, community, and tribal media nationwide.
The DOGE subcommittee hearing was titled Anti-American Airwaves, Holding the Heads of NPR and PBS Accountable. The chair of the subcommittee, Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, is head of a Delivering on Government Efficiency group. In her opening remarks, Greene made no bones about how she really feels.
NPR and PBS have increasingly become radical left-wing echo chambers for a narrow audience of mostly wealthy, white, urban liberals and progressives who generally look down on and judge rural America.
Republicans joined in Greene's criticisms of left-leaning bias. Democrats lined up in defense of the public broadcasters. Some described the hearing as a distraction from controversial actions of the Trump administration. Stephen Lynch is a Democrat from Massachusetts. He says the hearing comes at the direction of Elon Musk and President Trump. He said, if shame was still a thing, this hearing would be shameful.
So I'm sad to see that this once proud committee, the principal investigative committee in the House of Representatives, has now stooped to the lowest levels of partisanship and political theater to hold a hearing to go after the likes of Elmo and Cookie Monster and Arthur the Aardvark, all for the unforgivable sin of teaching the alphabet to low-income families' children and providing accessible local news and programming.
Democrat Robert Garcia of California took a humorous approach.
So instead of a serious hearing, we're here to attack NPR and PBS. So let's get right into it. Now, Ms. Kerger, the American people want to know, is Elmo now, or has he ever been, a member of the Communist Party of the United States? A yes or no?
No.
Now, are you sure, Ms. Kerger, because he's obviously red?
Well, he is a puppet, but no.
Despite the humor, Garcia says defunding public broadcasting is not funny.
The majority and our chairwoman should drop this attempt to silence media voices they don't like. So the message, I think, today is very, very simple. If we're going to get rid of any puppeteers, we should get rid of the one that's actually controlling Donald Trump. Fire Elon Musk and save Elmo. And with that, I yield back.
On April 1st, Democratic Senator Cory Booker took to the Senate floor for a record-breaking 25 hours and 5 minutes in protest of what he called attacks on democracy and basic rights under the Trump administration.
I rise with the intention of disrupting the normal business of the United States Senate for as long as I am physically able. In just 71 days, the President of the United States has inflicted so much harm on Americans' safety, financial stability, the core foundations of our democracy, and even our aspirations as a people for, from our highest offices, a sense of common decency.
In the Bay Area, roughly 20,000 University of California workers went on strike due to unfair labor practices. The third major strike in just 2 months. At Children's Hospital Oakland, healthcare workers rallied against a proposed merger with UCSF, warning it would undermine union protections and harm patients. Elsewhere, 23 states sued Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. over an $11 billion cut to public health funding, including $800 million slashed from California programs for childhood vaccinations and measles and flu response. And in Gaza, all 25 World Food Program bakeries were forced to shut down due to flour shortages and a lack of cooking gas, one factor that would lead to the declaration of famine. The beginning of April brought a new economic shock as Trump announced sweeping Liberation Day tariffs on imports, which critics quickly dubbed Recession Day. The tariffs sparked worldwide reaction, and Trump targeted allies, adversaries, and even uninhabited islands. In California, a bill to cap insulin prices unanimously passed a legislative committee after an earlier version had been vetoed by Governor Newsom. Meanwhile, Republicans blocked a resolution by California Senator Alex Padilla that would have limited the use of tariffs to offset tax cuts. the House passed a Republican bill aimed at restricting federal courts from blocking Trump's agenda.
California Republican Congressman Daryl Issa introduced the No Rogue Rulings, or NORA Act, earlier this year. It quickly became a priority among Republican lawmakers. President Trump has faced more than 15 nationwide court injunctions since taking office, from an effort to eliminate birthright citizenship to attempts to undo diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Congressman Issa said the district courts have strayed out of their lane.
In recent years, it has become glaringly obvious that federal judges are overstepping their constitutional bounds under Article 3 of the Constitution, which applies that lower courts are created under statute by the Congress.
But Democrats argue that by going after the federal district courts, the bill seeks to limit one of the main constitutional checks on executive power. New York Democrat Dan Goldman called on congressional Republicans to stop complaining about the federal courts and instead live up to their constitutional responsibilities.
Well, rather than blame the judges, I've got an idea. Stop breaking the law. This is a bad bill that gets us nowhere other than toward autocracy.
For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
The House would go on to pass the bill. Meanwhile, the Trump administration ordered State Department employees to anonymously report coworkers for alleged anti-Christian bias. And before their public fallout, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene remained one of Trump's most vocal defenders, calling critics brainwashed as she aggressively backed his agenda at town halls.
Republican lawmakers have been warned by leadership against holding town hall meetings in their districts for fear of drawing vocal opposition to some of President Trump's more controversial actions. But that didn't stop Georgia Congressperson and Trump supporter Greene, who held a town hall in Acworth, Georgia. And in the first few minutes, at least five protesters were ejected, one tackled by police, and two were shot with tasers.
Let me tell you, this is funded. The Democrats have been rioting. They are the party of violence. They are the party that... Go.
The periodic protests did not deter Greene from showing a full-throated support for Trump.
Just recently, you were told that President Trump is crashing the market with tariffs. That is absolutely not true. The media and the Democrat Party will try to fool you and think that President Trump is hurting America. He's actually defending America. The reality is you are being completely brainwashed by whatever source of news you listen to.
That concludes part one of the KPFA News Year in Review for 2025. Tune in tomorrow night to hear the rest of our coverage from this turbulent year. The stories you heard tonight are just some of the moments that defined a year of upheaval, resistance, loss, and resilience. Told by KPFA reporters who showed up, asked hard questions, and centered the voices most often left out. Join us again on New Year's Day for part two, as we pick up where we left off and continue looking back at 2025. From all of us at KPFA News, thank you for listening and for supporting independent, listener-supported journalism. I'm Lauren Schmidt. Happy New Year.
Thanks to our loyal listeners who continue to support KPFA. We're keeping our word and ending our drive on time, even though we've fallen short of reaching our goal. If you've been listening for years, or you're new to this fiercely independent radio station, your support bolsters our progressive spirit, keeping KPFA's mission as vigilant as always. Help us close the gap and make a donation right now at kpfa.org. Thank you.